You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wise, your host, and we're broadcasting live tonight from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's a beautiful summer night. It's finally not so hot here in New York. And things are okay. It's the end of July. The bees are producing. The garden's doing well. Things are moving along. So I have a friend, and her name is Ida Anastasia. Isn't that a great name? Ida Anastasia. It's such a great pairing of really plain and really fancy. It's like her parents said, our last name's Anastasia, so let's give our kids really dull names. Not that it's dull, but it's, you know, it's plain. So, Ida. So, Ida and I are really good pals. She's a good friend of mine. Although, she is a little bit older than me. I'm not really sure how old she is. She's somewhere between 70 and 90, I would say. But I'll never know because she'll never tell me for sure. But it's impossible to tell anyway because Ida is one of the most dynamic, active, sharp with it people, hippest people that I've probably ever met. She's definitely the most energetic person over 70 I've ever encountered. She's sort of like a character from a novel. She was born to this big Italian family in the Bronx and went to college at a time when women didn't go to college, and then traveled to Europe by ship when she was in her 20s with her sister, and then eschewed marriage and children and was a career gal and worked and lived in Manhattan her whole life. You know, a single career woman in an era of definitely married women. No kids. And she's always lived her life the way she likes to live it and still does. She's pretty cool. I like her a lot. Anyway, she lives in this little studio apartment in the like prettiest part of the West Village too. So she's like right out of a movie. You know, she lives in this cute little apartment. And the reason I know her is because she has a house in the same little community where my summer house is. It's this little bungalow colony, and she has one. And that's how I know her. And we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the past few years. And she's become a really great friend of mine. And we kind of share a lot of the same loves. We share a love of eating and of drinking and gossiping and old stuff. Finding old stuff in the garbage, just old things in general, and walking. She's a great walker. But we've sort of bonded over sort of a mutual love and appreciation of thrift, of thriftiness. Ida is kind of the essence of thrift, and I pride myself on my thriftiness, and so we've kind of bonded on that. We like to compare notes on our thrifty ways while we drink wine and talk about all the neighbors and eat Nutella out of the jar. That's another thing I love about her. She eats Nutella out of the jar. So she's really one of my favorite people, and I want to be her when I grow up. That's who I want to be. And one of the things about Ida, one of her thrifty ways, is that she never throws out food. She abhors food waste. And of course, it's because she's of the generation that's lived through the Depression. She remembers it. The Depression, the war years. She had a brother who died in World War II. You know, she's really of that era and, you know, lived in this very large family with seven kids. And there was no tolerance for waste. And that formed who she is. And, you know, that's a generation that is dying off. And they don't really have that. You know, people don't have that frame of reference anymore. I never throw out food either. I mean, obviously, if I have milk that goes bad, I throw it out. I don't force myself to drink that. But I also try not to have so much food around that it will go bad. But, you know, if I have leftovers of something, I don't throw them out. And that, for me, it's having grown up in a house with a Holocaust survivor mother and a pathological cheapskate for a father who has actually now reformed himself and loves to go out and spend hundreds of dollars in restaurants in Manhattan. Go think. And I grew up in not the Depression, but in the recession of the 70s. And, you know, things were tight and we didn't waste stuff and we had a garden and made our own jam. And I've talked about some of that on the show before. But you know, you never knew when the Nazis were going to knock on the door and come and take it all. Although I guess if it was the Nazis, they wouldn't really knock. They weren't that polite. They would just break down the door and come take it all. But, you know, if Jimmy Carter told us to lower the thermostat, we did it. It was the same kind of thing. So anyway, Ida likes to save food and I like to save food. And she also loves little jars and containers. And I love little jars and containers. So maybe I already am her. I don't have to become her. But if you open her freezer, you'll find jars with things like cooked leftover lentils, cooked pasta, sauce, you know, all kinds of stuff. Things that people wouldn't normally think of freezing, she freezes. Or things that people might not think worth saving, she saves. And she lives alone and, you know, her income is limited. She's retired and she really values the worth of food and appreciates it. And I respect that. And I do the same thing. I save leftovers and I'll either eat them as they are, you know, for a couple of days, or I'll turn them into something else. I call it leftover magic. It's how you make more magic out of old magic. And I'm proud of it. I'm not afraid to say it. I am proud of my leftover magic. Now, I've met a lot of people who are proud of quite the opposite. They take pride in the fact that they never save leftovers, that they scrape their plates and serving dishes right into the trash without a thought about the waste that they're creating, not just the food that they're wasting, but the actual waste volume that they're creating. And Americans throw out massive amounts of food waste every year. And it's mostly from overbuying because our food is so cheap that we think of it as disposable. And, you know, we buy in bulk. And, you know, did you ever look in like the garbage cans in an elementary school or high school lunchroom? You see how much food waste we make. So what I try to do is to buy food that's not cheap food. I like to buy quality food in smaller amounts. So farmers market produce versus, you know, Costco produce. Although I proudly shop at Costco too, but for certain things. But, you know, good cheese, good yogurt, better stuff in small amounts. So maybe I feel sort of more indebted to that food because it has a higher value and I appreciate it more. I don't know. I'm not trying to sound self-righteous or sanctimonious. I'm just saying that I don't like to waste. My mom has said to me on occasion that she remembers being back in Europe as a kid during the war. And she remembers my grandmother making soup out of grass to try to keep her kids alive. To feed the kids, she made grass soup. And she also stole bread from a bakery to keep her kids alive. So, you know, it's not really surprising that I turned out this way when you grow up hearing those sorts of stories. Every day it makes you feel a little bit bad about not finishing what's on your plate. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about wasting food, and also about how to preserve food and how to make it last. So we'll be right back. In the jungle, Tarzan boy chicken, and the lion them never sleep. Swing from waist, tree to trees, and making funny sounds. Earthy safari, man, them hide. Killing elephant, large and small, just for them big white to eat. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And if you're a fan of Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. Check it out. Become a fan. Send me a note. Let me know what you think of the show. I got an interesting note a few weeks ago from a guy in New Hampshire who wanted to know why I didn't come and visit his farm when I was up there a few weeks ago. Not his farm, his garden. I said, because you didn't invite me. I didn't know you were there. So you have to be a little more specific with your comments sometimes. But anyway, I would love to hear from you. You can also always leave comments on any of the shows you hear on Heritage Radio Network on the Heritage Radio Network homepage. So if you go to the show you like, there's a place for you to leave comments. And we like the comments. We want to keep hearing them. And remember, too, that you can always podcast any of our shows on iTunes at any time. And it's free. And that's thrifty. So we're talking about thriftiness tonight and food and the wasting of food that I see all around me. And how I was sort of trained not to waste food because of my parents' circumstances. And I was talking about my friend Ida, who's older, in her 80s, I don't know, but how she likes to put all her food in little jars in the freezer and save it, and then she pulls it all out and she'll sort of like throw it all into one big soup and cook it up, and I kind of do that thing kind of thing too. But anyway, I was teaching a class a couple weeks ago. I was teaching my class, and you know, the way it works in a culinary school is every day the lesson has this we call it the pull. It's the allotted food for the lesson, and it all gets brought up to the classroom from the storeroom. And once in a while, we need more of something or we are missing something, and we call down to the storeroom. But it's not like a big supermarket. I mean, they only have what they have. But the students kind of get used to that, to the calling down for stuff. And so I was teaching my class, and one of my students came up to me, and she said, "Chef, can you call down to the storeroom? We need more slab bacon." And I asked her what happened to the slab bacon that we had, because I knew we had a couple pounds. She said, "Oh, it fell on the floor." I said, "Well, where is it?" And she said, "Well, it's in the garbage." And I said, "Well, get your head into the garbage and find the slab bacon and pull it out and wash it and use it." And she looked like utterly horrified. She couldn't believe that I was asking her to do that. And I said, "If you were working for me in a restaurant, and you told me that you had thrown out the slab bacon because it fell on the floor, I would fire you on the spot. Because that's like you going to the register and taking money out of the register and putting it in the garbage can." And so I guess she learned her lesson. She dug herself down into the garbage and found the slab bacon and washed it off. And I hope she learned her lesson. But that led to a discussion between myself and some of the older students in the class, the ones who were, you know, 40-ish. And we realized that, you know, if you're in your kind of late 30s, 40s and above, you have parents and or grandparents who were touched by the Depression, the war. You know, they're old enough that they sort of reach back to that era. But if you're younger, if you're, let's say, 35-ish, 30 or younger, your parents, your grandparents, they might not have been of that era. They might be boomers or younger. And so they weren't touched by that. They grew up in a time of extreme affluence and plenty. And so they weren't affected by that. And so they maybe didn't instill those sorts of lessons in you. And I see that a lot in my students now, because most of them are very young. They don't have that sense of, well, this is a precious thing and it's valuable because we live in an era of such cheap plenitude of our food, and they never had that parent or that grandparent, you know, on them about not wasting. So they all need to spend some time with Ida, because Ida would whip them into shape, and they need to see her little jars, and they need to start putting their stuff in their little jars. She also likes to reuse boxes, and I like to do that too. Like, I bought a Mac laptop 6 years ago. It came in a really nice box. I still have the box because it's the perfect box for transporting the birthday cake that I make once a year for my niece, and it fits just right. So I save the box, and why not? So anyway, we're talking about thrift and not wasting food, and it got me thinking, because it's the time of year where there's a lot of produce around now, and if you want to kind of preserve it for the winter, you have to think about, you know, planning that out. Are you going to preserve? Are you going to pickle? Are you going to, you know, make jam? It's like we're getting into like the big bounty season, sort of August, September, you know, it's time. So 2 weeks ago, I was coming back from Ohio from this event I did at the Chef's Garden, which I talked about on last week's show. And I had I had a box coming home with me of, I probably had about 6 pounds of little tiny mixed baby heirloom tomatoes that I had gotten from the farm. It was a pretty big box. These tomatoes had been on display at the event with like tons of other vegetables, and they were basically all going to be put in the compost that next day. And I thought, God, if I ordered those tomatoes from the farm, you know, with the shipping, it would probably cost me $150 for those tomatoes. There's no way I'm letting those hit the compost, so I'm taking them. So I put them all into a box, and I wrapped up the box, I taped it, and I checked it as luggage, which of course cost me $30 in checked bag fees, but it was worth it. So we got home and we ate as many tomatoes as we could. But then I knew that if I didn't preserve those tomatoes, I was going to lose them within a couple of days. And, you know, I thought about what could I do? I could make sauce from them. I could make soup. But they weren't really sauce tomatoes because they're little teeny tiny ones and they're too small and it would be full of skin. So I thought, oh, I should roast them or really like dehydrate them in the oven because then they would shrivel up. They would take up a lot less space and then they would also last for a long time. But, you know, it's been like 100 degrees in New York the past couple weeks, so I didn't want to put the oven on. So I thought, I'll dehydrate them in the oven with the oven at 200 degrees, and so I'll put the oven on at night while we're sleeping in the other room with the air conditioning on, and then I won't even feel the heat of the oven. So that's what I did. I took those tomatoes, and I tossed them with olive oil, and I seasoned them, and I put them on sheet pans, and I put them in the oven at 200 degrees, and I left them in there for about 12 hours. And so I didn't really feel the heat in the apartment. And I did sort of a hybrid of slow roasting and dehydrating because I didn't take them all the way to dry because the bigger ones still had some juice left in them. Although the really little teeny ones dried up completely and turned into tomaisins, which is what I call them, like tomato raisins. So I have tomaisins and then I have sort of semi-dehydrated, half-juicy tomatoes. So anyway, after they were in there for about 12 hours, I took them out and I packed them up into these jars that are those cool, like sort of like mason jars, but they have the top with the gasket and the little like metal latch. I don't know what they're called. And I had gotten those jars from the event too. They were props on a display table and I took all those jars too because they were free and I can't resist something like that. So I packed them into these jars and then I topped it off with olive oil to seal them up and I put them in the fridge and they're amazing. They're great. Now, if you wanted to do this, you could heat process the jars too and can the tomatoes. And then you could store them at room temperature. But I didn't want to do that. I couldn't be bothered. So I just put them in my fridge where they will now keep for probably a good couple months or so. And I've been eating them. So this morning I made some quinoa because that's my new favorite breakfast. And I had my quinoa with these roasted tomatoes and a soft-boiled egg and some crumbled feta, and it was delightful, so delicious. And I've been putting them in salads and putting them on toast. They're really, really good on toasted sourdough with a little butter, really good butter, really good. And the tomatoes, like, they intensify. The tomato flavor gets really intense, and they get kind of chewy. Really good. If you have a surplus of tomatoes, I highly recommend this method. You know, in teaching at ICE, I see so much food waste because we don't really have an outlet for our finished food. The food that we make, we either eat it or the students eat it or they take it home, but we can't donate it anywhere if it's been touched or processed. So we give to City Harvest all of our unused product, you know, cases of stuff that we don't use, but you know, there's a lot of waste there and it kind of kills me. I wish there was a way to use it all up, but unfortunately we haven't figured that out yet. Anyway, we have to take another little break, and when we come back, we have a special guest in the studio tonight, my friend Lori Pazina, and we're going to talk to her about her thrifty lifestyle and her newly built clay oven and what she's been up to with that oven. So we'll be right back. Sometimes the water get wider. Where did they gone then?
the gun deppin. We do the gun deppin. We the gun deppin. We do the gun deppin. The gun. Bang bang hit a man. Bang ding 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 bang. Bang ding 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 man. Bang ding 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 bang. Bang ding 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 man. Bang ding 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 bang.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Weitz, your host, and in the studio tonight, here to talk with us about one of my favorite subjects, and I think one of hers, which is thrift, is another friend, a little younger than Ida, Lori Pizzina. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Welcome to Heritage Radio. Your brother's been on the show, too.
Yeah, we've listened to that show.
The whole family's been here now. Yeah. So, now, if you listen to the show regularly, you may remember that a few weeks ago, I came back from visiting Lori's house in New Hampshire, and she had built this clay oven, and I had a great old time playing around with it, making pizza. We cooked some lamb. We made some bread in there. So she's in the studio here today to give us an update on the oven and kind of how you've fared with it since you built it and since we kind of inaugurated it that weekend. And just kind of fill us in on that. So do you want to first explain kind of what the oven is or how you made it?
Well, it's made out of clay dirt, which I dug out of my yard. And because I built a straw bale house, I know how to tell that there's a lot of clay in there. Also, you could find clay elsewhere and mix it with sand and also some dirt and make an oven, and it's an age-old thing. And the way I did it, I got a little booklet, and followed the directions.
What's the book called?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I got it on Amazon. It's like a hippie out west kind of book.
Because that guy from New Hampshire who wrote me the message and said, how come you didn't come see my garden? I don't know you, but yeah, he wanted to know the name of the book.
I know. I've been meaning to
I'm sure he can find it on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I looked at a bunch of them, and this was the shortest one.
So oh, okay. That's what I was doing.
I don't have a long attention span, so yeah. I figured just the facts. Anyway, so you just make a platform, and without going into too much detail about that, I just used a pile of rocks left over from the excavation of my house for the foundation. And so I had a pile of rocks, boulders in New Hampshire made of granite, and I just built it up with some sand and made a level platform, and then made a mound of sand. And the short of it is packed it with dirt. And when there's many layers, there's first the layer of sand, a mound of sand, and then there's a layer of clay, and then there's an insulating layer. I used beer bottles.
Crushed or whole?
Whole beer bottles, because air is the best insulator. Mm-hmm. So the air is in the bottle, and that's the reason, not the glass.
Wow.
And same as fiberglass.
Right. Like I've heard that there's a guy who built a sailboat and used plastic water bottles.
And it's the air after. Right. And so anyway, so and then those were packed with sawdust mixed with clay just to hold it in place. Then another layer of clay and on top of that. And then you could keep going with finish work and make it look prettier. But mine is just basically a mound with a hole.
Mm.
And you could make a clay door. You could make a stone door, a wood door. I just use a baking sheet right now and leftover wood. I have some slabs of wood, and for the firing, you want to, since it doesn't have a chimney, you want air to come in and air to go out and circulate, which is convection. And so I sort of prop up a piece of wood and just let it burn out, and then I just burn it later. And so it allows the air to come in under and out the top, because I leave a gap at the bottom of the top. And then when I'm ready to bake, I just use a cookie sheet that I have that happens to fit, and prop it in place just to keep the heat in and try to get it up to temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And on the theme of frugality, I would say what I've had on my mind from in the last few weeks after first starting is having an efficient burn and then using the heat of the fire most efficiently over a long period of time, because it takes a while to cool. So at first, when Erica was up, we used just scraps of lumber and scraps of firewood that I had, more camp wood, which is doesn't burn as hot as what I would use in my wood stove, which would be hardwoods. They burn it. You get a lot more BTUs out of them. So what I do, I have piles of sticks in the woods, and the book tells you to use thinner sticks and get a more efficient burn, get a higher heat quicker, because you'll have air circulating in and around the sticks, and you won't, you know, create a lot of smoke and not a lot of heat. So I changed over from using larger chunks of wood to smaller smaller sticks, and just loading it up, burning it hot, loading it a few times. And then to best use the heat, what I did recently, I left the coals in there, and I charred up some peppers, made roasted red peppers. And then to cook a pizza while the oven was really hot, I then took out the coal. And then we did this when you were mm-hmm. up. We took the coal out and put it, set it aside, and then it's perfect for cooking meat.
Yeah, right on the stone.
On the stone outside. But then to use the oven as an oven, you take the coal out. Your oven's hot, and then you have time to make a pizza. Or last time I used it, I made three or four small pizzas using the roasted red peppers and fresh herbs and just some whatever cheese I had. I think I had some gorgonzola. And then I did just a focaccia, just olive oil, salt, and pepper. And then the interesting thing about the oven is that it imparts a sort of strange spicy flavor. I don't know if it's from the clay or from the wood, but it almost seems Moroccan or something.
Yeah, I noticed that when we made the bread and stuff in there. I almost thought like you had put like za'atar on it or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It's just, it comes from the taste of the clay or something. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, and so basically, first use the coals, then use the hot oven for a quick cook pizzas, and then it's cooled off more to baking temperature, and it would do, I did two or three loaves of bread that were rising during the day. I'm compressing the story because it's really a few different experiments that in a perfect world I would have done all at once. But,
and we're running out of time. But, yeah.
The last thing would be a long, slow stew. I used sweet Italian sausage, and it cooked over low for 5 hours. Delicious. Or you could do cassoulet. Anyway, that's basically it.
So you got like all of the stuff you cooked off basically from one firing.
Yeah, and really not that many sticks when I used the smaller sticks.
So we were kind of doing it wrong by putting big pieces of wood in there. You really just want to use tiny little sticks. And then it's less polluting and you're making less smoke. So it's actually really efficient.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to justify making smoke because, you know, it pollutes. But
right. Although, you know, I once was reading this comparison of like if you were going to heat your house, you know, with gas or with wood, like all the alternative fuels, they actually said that dead wood would fall down and release carbon into the atmosphere anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're going to release it whether you burn it or it rots.
Ooh, I feel better now.
Yeah, versus like natural gas or coal or something, which left in the earth would never release its carbon. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's just to make like wood burning people feel better or
something. Well, I feel better already.
Feel better. Yeah, I actually meant to tell you that weekend after we produced all that smoke. I was like, don't worry, it's okay because, yeah, so you had mentioned, we're almost out of time, but you had mentioned cassoulet, which is this really traditional, you know, bean and meat stew from southwestern France. And that's what people used to do is they would put their cassoulet together and then they would take it to the village baker on Saturday when he finished baking off all the bread for people and the fire was dying down. Everyone would slide their cassoulet into the oven and leave it all afternoon and all night Saturday. And then Sunday on their way home from mass, they'd pick it up and it would be done.
These sausages were so good. It was just sweet Italian sausage from the supermarket, just laid on top of diced celery, including the tops, carrots, onion, and then fresh thyme on top. Mm. And it was like pudding. It was it looked gray, kind of.
Yeah.
So it wasn't beautiful, but it was so good. The whole yard smelled like celery and herbs.
So nice. Yeah, because it kind of braised in there because it cooked so slowly.
Yeah, it gave off its own liquid.
Wow. Sounds great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. So you're going to have to come back and do like a whole show with me on this.
I'll tell you about my Ida and my mom.
I know. The thrifting. I know. We were talking at the bar before about your mom and your Ida and the thriftiness. And I know. I have a million thrift stories. And you're one of the thriftiest people I know. You built your own house out of straw. It doesn't get thriftier than that. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, unfortunately, we're out of time. But thank you for coming all this way and being a guest on the show. So thanks for listening. Thanks to Nat in the control room tonight. And we'll see you next week on Why We Cook.